B-Pod Studios.
This is...
That's so dumb!
Velger.
Oh, you idiot!
And Mass.
Holy crap!
Velger and Mass.
I hate that.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
As you could probably see, David Pastrnak was out on the ice this morning. David actually was undergoing a procedure on his left thumb. The repair was successful. David will be out of the lineup for the next 2 weeks, and then we'll be reevaluated where we will likely have a more definitive timeline as to when he'll return to play.
Hour number two, Agenda Free Friday. Again, Felger's out today. We thought about hooking him up by Skype, but then we decided against it. We like it better when he's not here. Agenda Free Friday, driven by the Bernardi Auto Group. Jim Murray's alongside. Marshall Hook is here to give us headlines. Dawn Sweeney from earlier in the week on the David Pastrnak situation. And look, Murray, no shock here. We're cynical, skeptical, negative, sarcastic. So when we hear that David Pastrnak suffered a thumb injury. Marshall, do you have a tweet in front of you?
I do, because you asked me to get it, so I did, Tony, because that's how it works here.
Well, okay, but the bottom line is that sometimes I ask and you don't get it.
No, come
so
on.
So the bottom.
That's usually what happens in that scene.
I was going to say, I'm not Murray.
Yeah.
So Sunday night.
Yes.
Okay, Sunday night. Well, let me rewind. On Monday, the Bruins tweeted this out because none of us knew about any of this until Monday, when Pastrnak did not show up at Bruins practice, and then all of a sudden the questions became, where is David Pastrnak? And the Bruins Twitter account put out this. Go ahead, Marshall.
Pastrnak and several of his teammates attended a sponsorship dinner on Sunday night at about 11:30. While walking to his transportation, Pastrnak fell and injured his left thumb. Team will know better in 2 weeks. Pastrnak expected to return and play this season.
Okay, so Marshall, you're not necessarily a regular here on the Felger and Mass Show.
No.
You are a regular contributor.
Thank you.
You're here oftentimes when someone else is not. And as I said, Murray will vouch for me here, and Felger's not here, but we have a tendency to be a little cynical.
Tendency? Yeah, that's
skeptical.
When I get mildly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can you catch us on a bad day? We tend to perceive things in a negative light. You know, glass is half empty kind of perspective, Marshall. That's sort of what the idea. So when you saw that tweet or heard this story, what's the first thing that popped into your mind, Marshall? And I don't want to at all cloud your thinking.
Dude was drunk.
Okay, without question, right?
Yeah.
Has anybody, and we're not the only ones to throw this out there, has anybody disputed this?
No. Only two people fall in the world, Maz, and that's the elderly and the drunk.
And very, very little children, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, right.
Let alone the drunk elderly.
Yeah.
Like, that is a completely different scenario.
My grandma.
To me, I'm curious to see what Gasper thinks of this, because Gasper's like an actual reporter. You know, sets foot in locker rooms, deals with these guys, would never throw anything around that would be borderline reckless, because he has to actually face these people and deal with them.
Yeah,
right?
He carries himself with dignity and calm, cool reasoning. It annoys the hell out of me.
No, that's right. Gasper's actually professional.
Yeah.
So I want to ask Gasper what the first thing he thought of when he comes in. And Gasper, I told you too, has a great take on Mookie Betts that we will get to in the 4 o'clock hour. In the interim, we'll get back to your calls. It's Agenda Free Friday. We'll touch on anything and everything. I don't know where this one's going, but Dean in Shrewsbury, go ahead.
Hi, Felger was way off saying lead is rolling around in his grave about the Kyrie situation. He let Russell sit out scrimmages and sip tea. Let him go away for days. And then he also, when the other players were complaining about it, said there's one rule for Russell and other rules for everybody else.
Okay.
So he'd be all about this.
All right. So, Dean, Dean, thanks for the call. I saw Dean's comment line that said Red Auerbach's treatment of Bill Russell. And I wasn't sure where that was going, but this makes sense. That early in the week, Felger was saying the whole Celtic culture. The Celtics have prostrated themselves. I think that was the word he used, prostrated. They have prostrated themselves for Kyrie Irving, and that Red Auerbach never would have tolerated this sort of thing. And the caller says that Red kissed Russell's ass, which he did. Every star player in that league over the course of history has had his ass kissed one way or another.
Because you can't win without him. It's okay. It's okay to do it. I know, look, some of it can be extremely unbecoming, such as Danny Ainge's retweet of Chris Forsberg of NBC Sports Boston yesterday, where Forsberg breaks down statistically why the Celtics aren't better without Kyrie, and then Danny Ainge retweets and just writes, duh, with a shamrock. Ugh.
I mean, unbelievable.
Like, how
right?
do you not just immediately jump in the shower after that? Like, oh, what have I done?
I mean, the Celtics clearly.
But can you blame them?
The narrative clearly irritates the Celtics because they want to make sure Kyrie knows he's appreciated. Because Kyrie's got a big decision to make in a little while, and a lot of people think that he's already out of here.
Well, they've already. Jimmy. He's got his ear to the ground there. He has his moles, and they know how fickle he is, right? Like, if you follow this guy's career, you know that. But how can they not be shaken up that week of leading into the Super Bowl, where you're sticking mics in his face, and you know there's all the speculation of him going to the Knicks and all that, and he's like, I don't owe anybody. Talk to me July 1st. If I'm Ainge in the brass, I'm like, whoa. All right, whatever he needs, whatever he wants, we'll give it to him. We have to make sure that he stays here.
Bill is in Milton, wants to talk about Matt Kuchar. And for those of you who don't know, Matt Kuchar, the golfer on the PGA Tour, won a tournament in Mexico and gave a shoddy tip to a replacement caddy that week. Bill's in Milton. Bill, what do you got?
In my reminder sent with you, I guess me thinking that he was from Connecticut makes me not know anything about golf as well because you can't pronounce his name. $2,000 to $3,000 is what these guys go with their millionaire buddies on like a quick vacation and pay their caddies just on a social gathering. It'd be the equivalent of you giving someone $20,000 to start a sneaker company, and then he comes back and it turns into Reebok and he gives you $20,000 plus 10 back and he gives you the Kuchar smile. We had El Chapo up here. Matt Kuchar is forever known as El Cheapo now.
I like it. Yeah, see, that caller has a heart, unlike the guy who called from, and I'm guessing, Fairfield County in Connecticut. Yeah, if you didn't give the guy what he should have got, the customary 10%, you're cheap. And how about this? Just bottom line, and okay, like, I'm not into golf as much as, say, Hardy, who has the golf show. Check it out when it starts up again Saturday morning, Sports Hub. The guy hadn't won a tournament. I do know this. Kuchar, however you want to pronounce it.
Kuchar.
He hadn't won a tournament in 4.5 years with his regular caddy. Gets that customary 10%. The new caddy helps him win $1.3 million. But he cheaps out on it because that was the handshake deal.
But he's not a caddy, Jim.
Oh, right. Yeah, no, he's just a bag boy.
He's from someplace else.
Right, yeah.
I mean, that caller, really. Like, tell me there wasn't a tone.
Should be happy to get $5,000.
Yeah, and Marshall's talking about the caller. He's talking about what the caller said for anyone who's misinterpreting that. Demetrius is in Boston. Demetrius, go.
Hey, man, I just think it's crazy how a lot of these people think Anthony Davis is overrated and how we're better without Kyrie. Now, I believe that if we don't pursue Davis, we can win. I think all it takes is all these young kids on the team to just be cohesive with Kyrie Irving on the floor.
So, Demetrius, hold on. I'm going to stop you there. You're saying they can win without Anthony Davis, but Kyrie is still here.
Exactly, but I'm saying they don't get along, basically. So they have a different attitude when Kyrie's out because they get more touches, more minutes, you know, whatever. I think it's just the mental aspect of it, you know?
Oh, this is and Demetrius, I'm 100% with you. This is what I was talking about the other day because Mike was asking us, Tony, why it looks different, why it looks more cohesive when Kyrie isn't there. It's because they don't like him. I think it's that simple. They look at him as someone like Jaylen Brown thinks he's a pain in the ass and he talks too much. And they, you know, and this is where they got to check themselves, too. I have to believe that some of those young guys like Brown look at him and say, dude, we almost got to the finals without you last year. We shut up. We don't need you. And I think that that's affecting the play. And that, you know, Kyrie Irving gums it up when he's out there. And a lot of those guys hold resentment against him. That's what it is.
Yeah, there's no question they look different on the floor this week. I mean, they did. One guy in particular looked like a completely different player without Kyrie on the floor. We'll get to Gordon Hayward next.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5.
98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mez.
Now Marcus Morris on the wing. Return to Horford straight away. 10 on the shot clock. Back to Morris, left wing. Everything on the perimeter. 7 on the shot clock. Morris drives in traffic. Kick out in the corner. Hayward open. 3. Oh. Got it! Gordon Hayward having a game of his Celtic life tonight in Philadelphia. And Boston leads by 2.
Somebody spank that man.
Well, not only scoring it, he was playing. We played with him in the pick and roll, you know, a ton tonight. And we wanted to try to play, you know, with our bigs out and lifted and those types of things. But he's been great at that all year. And then when he makes shots, everybody writes nice things, right? I mean, at the end of the day, he's a really, really good playmaker. And today he also was able to play off of some extra passes. And some other people found him and he made them. And so it's a good feeling.
For Gordon Hayward. Bad time for the All-Star break if you're Gordon Hayward, given the way he played earlier in the week. That was Brad Stevens after the game against Philadelphia. The next night against Detroit, Hayward looked pretty much the same. I mean, back-to-back nights. And if you remember earlier in the week when we were talking about the Philadelphia game, one of the things that I had said was, and there's a reason why we played that Stevens comment for you, but one of the things that we had said was, or I had said, was that he still looked the same. The only difference is that the shots went in. That was on Tuesday. Okay, that was on Tuesday against Philly. On Wednesday against Detroit, Hayward went out there and had another good game. And Murray, what do you have, 8 free throw attempts that night against Detroit? Yeah. Is that what it was? I think he went 8 for 8 from the line, right? And the 8 for 8 from the line, the attempts are more important than the makes because it indicated that Hayward was going to the basket. And if you saw the early part of that game in particular, he was initiating contact. He played physically. Murray, the word you used earlier in the week was confident.
Confident and aggressive. You know, and I thought it was a flashier game against Philadelphia. That was the sexier of the two. But I almost kind of liked the one against Detroit because that was mostly an interminable game to watch. But I liked watching him that night because he did show a toughness that you hadn't seen since he's been a member of this team.
Grit.
Yeah.
Right? There was some grit there. And with Hayward, you wonder because of the injury, like, is he going to be as assertive? Is he not quite as confident? Is he, you know, is he not going to the basket with the same sort of decisiveness, all of that, and force?
Well, and there's something, I mean, go back to that Golden State game a couple of weeks ago when he's flopping around on the floor like a fool. And he played, whatever, the 22, 24 minutes, and he had 2 points in that game.
Brutal.
And then the unnamed Golden State Warrior, which was likely Durant, says that night.
Or Draymond Green.
Or Draymond Green, yeah. He was a liability on both ends of the floor, and he was right, whoever that unnamed player was, Durant or Draymond.
And so the other night, I thought he was assertive on both ends. I even, defensively, there were a couple of times where guys were going to the basket, and Hayward got up and bodied him up, contested shots near the rim. Like, he was much more assertive and confident on the defensive end as well as the offensive end. Like, to me, that's how it felt to me. So when I said to you after the Tuesday game, I don't know what was really different other than the shots going in, the Wednesday game was more impressive.
Agreed.
From a confidence and assertiveness standpoint.
Yeah.
He looked like a different guy in that game.
Right. I'd rather, like, look, I'd take whatever. The shots were prettier against Philly, but I liked his game against Detroit more.
I mean, he was good in that game. And maybe of all the things going on out there with Kyrie and Anthony Davis and LeBron and the NBA, maybe this is really the most important thing is how Hayward plays. Because, and Gasper's touched on this, and again, Chris Gasper will be here at 4 o'clock, but the whole idea was Hayward and Kyrie together playing at peak efficiency, the two of them. And the Celtics have not had that because Gordon Hayward hasn't been the same guy. And we know how Stevens feels about Hayward because when he was asked about Hayward's performance in that game against Philadelphia, and you have to listen closely, and Murray, I'm going to pat myself on the back because I picked this up first, okay? That when Stevens was asked about Hayward...
Me, I did it.
Yeah, it was me. It was me. I hurt my shoulder.
It was all me.
Here's what he said about Hayward, and we picked up a very, very subtle change in his direction of what he wanted to say in the middle of this. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, not only scoring it, he was playing. We played with him in the pick and roll, you know, a ton tonight, and we wanted to try to play, you know, with our bigs out and lifted and those types of things, but...
He wanted to say we wanted to try to play through him.
And you can hear it.
And we wanted to try to play, you know, with our bigs out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so you know what? It wouldn't surprise me if now that Hayward is starting to look more like Hayward, maybe we see a little of this when Hayward and Kyrie are on the floor together. Kyrie coming off a screen, squaring up. I mean, he was a spot-up shooter in Cleveland, basically, because LeBron was hogging the ball the whole time. So maybe they can now run some version of that with the two of them on the floor together, because they just really haven't been close together since they got here. Fred's an A-er. Fred, what do you got? Fred!
Hi, guys. I'm sorry about that. I really enjoy your show, and I just wanted to call in and, you know, give my opinion about the Celtics again. I'm an armchair GM, and I just wanted to know if you would consider this package explosive, trading Jaylen Brown and Terry Rozier and picks for Anthony Davis. Would you consider that an explosive package?
No, I wouldn't. Murray, to you?
No, it's not enough.
Marshall, to you?
Nope.
Okay, and the other thing is you can't trade Rozier. First of all, you're after the deadline, but Rozier is a free agent at the end of the year. So
if they could have done that, they would have done that.
Exactly. No, that's not explosive. Explosive is Jason Tatum. We all know Tatum's value.
That would have been highway robbery is what that would have been.
Of course. Luke's in Vermont, our buddy Green Mountain Luke. What do you got, pal?
Before I get to the Kyrie situation, just quick on Hayward. I think you're right, Tony. I think the plan was always to put the ball in Hayward's hand in a pick and roll with Horford and let Kyrie be the primary option but secondary on the offense. I think he was going to play off the ball, and they wanted Hayward to be that point forward. But I don't think we can link Hayward's recent success to Kyrie being off the floor. I just think it's timing. I just think he's coming along slowly. But I think you hit the nail on the head with him defensively. He looked aggressive early in the year. They were picking on him bad. He looked like he was wounded, and he was. But they really used to go at him, and defensively now he's starting to look a lot better. But the whole idea with Kyrie that we're better without him is laughable. That's ridiculous. First of all, half the wins are against Chicago and Cleveland and a bunch of no-name teams. But it's all about what your ceiling is. And with Kyrie, your ceiling is a championship. Without him, lucky to get to the conference finals.
So, look, that's my feeling, is that ultimately you need Kyrie to beat the best of the best competition. And in that league, that's like two or three teams in the league usually. Now it's one with Golden State, Murray. But usually there are two or three championship-caliber teams, and that's it. That's it. And if you can't beat those teams in the playoffs, forget the regular season, you're not going to beat those teams without a great player. It's just not going to work that way, I don't think. I mean, every championship team I can ever think of, save for that Pistons team that everybody loves to bring up in this conversation with Chauncey Billups and Rasheed Wallace, and save for that one team, every other team really had like an all-timer on it. I mean, all the championship teams usually have an all-timer on it. And so I just think that, you know, it's, you know, we can say that we like the Celtics better when Kyrie Irving's not on the floor. They play a better team basketball, all of that. They're not going to win a championship right without that kind of talent.
It has a ceiling, and it would be as best of what you've got the last couple of years. You maybe win a couple of rounds. Hey, maybe even squeak into the finals, but you're not going to win a championship without a player of that caliber. It's just not going to happen.
So I'll tell you what. I'm eager to see when they come back after the break if Hayward is still playing at the same level and if Stevens can incorporate Hayward's ability to, you know, in the high pick and roll there, to come off of screens with the ball in his hand and either score on his own or, more importantly, make the right decision, which is really the strength of his game. Okay? If they can somehow do that with Kyrie playing off the ball. And you don't have to do it every trip down the floor. I mean, you can change it every, you know, one time it's Kyrie, one time it's Hayward, whatever. Because, again, and this didn't even occur to me until now as we were discussing it, Kyrie effectively did this in Cleveland. LeBron had the ball. Kyrie was a terrific player in Cleveland. And because of that, I think we looked at Kyrie and said, well, he doesn't make other people better. He's not a passer. He didn't have to. It all went through LeBron. It was different. And now, more recently, when Kyrie was playing going into the Clippers game when he suffered the injury, I think you were seeing Kyrie elevate guys. I think over a stretch of 7-8 games here, he was really terrific. And I wonder if maybe, I don't know, I want to see how it all looks. Because it did feel like something clicked there with Gordon Hayward here this week. To me, it's that part was pretty obvious. Just a reminder, Agenda Free Friday is driven by the Bernardi Auto Group. Marshall has got your headlines here, and when we come back, I want to get to a couple of callers, Tom and Drakett in particular, who wants to talk about the Patriots rebuild. I saw an interesting story today And we touched on the Patriots earlier in the week concerning who the Patriots might select at the end of the first round with the 32nd overall pick. We'll do that when we come back.
Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hey, did you see my Wikipedia change?
Yes, we saw it. Yes.
Who did that?
I don't know. I got two sons now. I think that's pretty funny.
It's amazing, though. The Wikipedia page hasn't changed yet. I guess in order for it to change, somebody has to either complain or, more importantly, prove it to be untrue. And nothing here, really. It's hard to prove it untrue.
Right. And who wants to change that anyway?
Nobody wants to change.
You know my two sons aren't going to change that. They know better.
All right. So
Mikey and Tony.
Is there any...
I might let them go out and play today. Depends how I feel.
All right. Well, hey, it sounds
they're on time. They're on timeout. You guys okay up there?
Let them out of the box.
Yeah.
Well, bend me over and spank my hairy white ass. Kyle Van Noy, he can gloat a little. We discussed this earlier in the week. He's allowed to gloat. Daddy Van Noy shut us up pretty good this year. Was that with Beatle and Zoe earlier this week?
Yeah.
That was on Monday, wasn't it?
Yep.
Good God, that feels like it was a lifetime ago. Marshall, had you heard that cut?
I had not at all, no.
So the guy actually feels like he's got a little bit of a sense of humor. We've invited him to come on the show. They still haven't accepted. It doesn't have to be in studio either. Exactly. Yeah, fat chance of that happening. Nonetheless, I was reading something today that I thought was interesting regarding the Patriots here. And I haven't touched on the Pats yet, so I want to do it now. The Patriots, as a result of winning the Super Bowl, will have the number 32 pick in the draft. The NFL does not construct its draft order based solely on regular season record. So if it did, who would that be? It would be New Orleans, right? New Orleans would have had the 32nd pick.
Yeah, yeah.
The 32nd pick, the last pick always goes to the Super Bowl winner. 31 goes to the Super Bowl loser, I think it is, right? So the Patriots, again, will have the 32nd pick. If there's a negative for winning a championship, you end up at 32 instead of whatever. They would have been six spots higher or something. So at number 32, there were a number of places that had the Patriots selecting, you know, quarterbacks, what have you, at the final.
Daniel Jones from Duke.
Right. And so let me just rattle off this quickly, and I'll spare you all the names other than to tell you that Daniel Jones, the quarterback at Duke, was the prediction of Mel Kiper. Okay, everybody knows Kiper. Right. Todd McShay predicts defensive tackle Gerald Willis III of Miami. And then some of the other predictions for the Patriots at the end of the first round. Kyler Murray, Heisman Trophy winning quarterback at Oklahoma. Two people have the Patriots taking Murray.
Comes from good stock.
So this is one, two, there were seven predictions.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay, seven. There you go. Yeah, I get it. Defensive lineman Christian Wilkins of Clemson.
A lot of tackles. Probably going to go in that first round.
Wide receiver DK Metcalf of Old Miss. And there were two people who predicted DK Metcalf, one of which is his site, Walter Football.
They're pretty good.
It's actually pretty good, yeah. And Pete Prisco, our buddy from the Super Bowl of CBS Sports, also predicts wide receiver DK Metcalf. Now, if I were to ask you what's the Patriots' biggest area of need, position of need, what would you say, Murray?
Wide receiver.
Marshall?
In terms of the draft, well, because that's a different question than you asked a moment ago.
Okay, so I'll tell you what. Stop before you go then. I think most people would agree wide receiver. Okay, like, Do you want them to take a wide receiver in the first round, Murray?
Also, no. This is where it gets into a bigger conversation.
Yes, that's what I'm saying, because that's a different question.
What's going to happen with Rob Gronkowski? What's going to happen at safety? Is Devin McCourty going to retire here? If we get some retirements and, say, Irv Smith, the tight end out of Alabama, drops and he's available, I want them to take Irv Smith because he's a good pass-catching tight end.
Okay, but again, don't give me an individual player because then it gets really gets really subjective.
If Gronk retires, I want a tight end.
You want to tight end the first round?
Yeah, because there's going to be good ones available.
Okay, and I should mention, by the way, that Bleacher Report does have them taking a tight end. The kid from Iowa, T.J. Hockenson, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
Okay, Marshall, what position
would
you take?
I'm going with quarterback in the draft because I think that
in these the first
guys,
round?
Yes, because I think that these guys who are right in there, that spot that they could be available at the end of the first round, are not guys that would start in the first year. So they're the perfect kind of developmental guys to bring in for a couple years before they have to start, because then you're going to need a quarterback.
Okay, I don't want a receiver in the first round.
I never want a receiver in the first round.
Okay, and if I were the Patriots, what I would do, and again, obviously, some of this depends on who retires and who does not. You say tight end, defensive lineman. I want a defensive lineman in the first round, even if Trey Flowers is staying. Okay, I'm not totally sold on their defensive line. They could use a good defensive lineman. This draft is supposed to be deep in defensive linemen, by the way. So to me, if you're the Patriots, end of the first round, wide receiver is easily the biggest position of need on the team, I think. But I want a defensive lineman. Tom's in Draco. Tom, what do you want?
Well, I want a wide receiver myself, and my question to you is...
In the first round?
First round. Will the Patriots spend some money and hold some of the players they currently have and go out and get other free agents? Are they going to be conservative like they've done in the past and go for retreads? So your thoughts on that.
Okay, so look, I think they're going to be conservative and go for retreads. They always are. I'm just surprised that people would say that they want a wide receiver in the first round, given their history of drafting and developing wide receivers.
Well, he's never drafted a wide receiver in the first round. Maybe that's why many of them have sucked. That's why I'm surprised to hear you say that you wouldn't want to see them take one in the first round.
I want nothing to do with a wide receiver in the first round.
Switch it up, please. For once, take one. There's going to be some good ones available. Like one of the, you know, him, there's a kid from Ohio State, Paris Campbell. Like, there's going to be guys that are likely going to go in that first round around that area. I wouldn't hate that either.
So the year they passed on Cordero Patterson, who did they take that year? Marshall, look that up for me, would you? Marshall, roll it.
Oh, who did they end up going with that year?
Look up Cordero Patterson's draft, because a lot of people had Cordero Patterson coming to the Patriots in that draft. Find out who went to them in that draft instead. Chris is in Beverly. Chris, go.
Hey, yeah, about Irving. One thing I'd like to hear you guys' take on is, do you think Danny Ainge regrets taking Irving as the rebound from his relationship with LeBron in the first place? Because with the injuries, the fact that the chemistry hasn't been there, and who else they may have gotten if they hadn't gotten Irving.
So wait, he lost me a little bit there.
I don't know if he regrets it.
Regret bringing Irving in at all? Is that what he said?
Yeah.
No.
I don't think that they probably didn't anticipate him to be as big of a pain in the ass as he's been in terms of trying to get him to re-sign and some of the stuff they've dealt with here just in the last few weeks. Maybe they thought he was going to come here and be a little bit more appreciative because it sounded like he wanted to get the hell away from Cleveland and as far away from LeBron as possible. It's deteriorated since then. But regret? No, I think that's too harsh.
No, absolutely not. You make that deal 10 times out of 10. 10 times out of 10 you make that trade. Why are you laughing, Jimmy? Are you laughing at me or are you laughing at someone else, Jimmy Stewart?
I'm laughing because the Cordero Patterson pick was by the Vikings at 29, which was a trade out from New England that year.
Okay, that's what I thought.
And who'd they end up taking?
Jamie Collins at 52.
I was
going to
say their next pick was Jamie Collins.
So, I mean...
And 59 was Aaron Dobson.
Okay, so they got Dobson in the second round. And you know what? Neither one of those guys can play. If you ask me, Patterson's still in the league. He's a kick returner at the very least. Dobson sucked.
Travis Kelce went 63 that year.
Okay. Well, again, I mean, we all thought they needed...
The Honey Badger went 69.
We all thought they needed a receiver that year. And Cordero Patterson was the guy a lot of people thought was going to end up with New England. And they passed on him. And I think they made the right move in that draft.
Yeah, because they got him later and they won a Super Bowl with him.
Oh, God, please.
Bleh, man.
Jimmy's just trying to... Jimmy's trying to bug the crap out of me. And you know what? He's succeeding, frankly. When we come back...
So I can close my tab with this. You don't need this information.
What did I ask you to look up again?
Is this what you just do what every Jimmy day, gave. Murray?
Oh, yeah. All the time.
Look that up. And then by the time you get it, 40 seconds later, they don't need it anymore.
Well, hurry the hell up, Marshall. I mean, Jimmy Stewart got it before you did. He's juggling a million tasks back there, for crying out loud. If you had faster fingers, thinner fingers, Marshall.
I have to move this entire microphone out of the way to use the
keyboard. Keenan Allen went 76 that year.
So, see, now there was a good pick. I like Keenan Allen. There's been something that I found amusing at spring training earlier this week that I've been meaning to touch on all week that we haven't gotten to, and it also triggered a question in my mind regarding the Red Sox and their roster this year. We'll touch on that when we come back.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. The Sports
Hub. Eddie looks great physically. I think that's everybody's in the best shape of their life when they come to spring training, but he actually is in the best shape of his life. I think for the first time in a while, he was able to have a normal offseason, and you can see it on his body.
Red Sox manager Alex Cora earlier in the week talking about Eduardo Rodriguez. Marty, did you catch this earlier in the week? Did you see this, Marshall? You're big baseball. Either of you guys see this?
I guess not, no.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll be honest. Like, I've been barely paying attention to what's going on in spring training. It's a whole big nothing burger right now.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you.
I need excitement. I need something to go on. No, David Price thankfully talked yesterday, so let's go with this Eduardo Rodriguez.
No, nothing burger, plain. Yeah, that's what it is. Plain nothing burger. That's exactly what it is down there, Murray. Play it again, Jimmy Stewart, so Murray can hear. Play it again.
Everybody's in the best shape of their life when they come to spring training, but he actually is in the best shape of his life, I think.
Okay, talking about Eduardo Rodriguez. He's in the best shape of his life.
That's straight out of the John Farrell playbook.
If I had a dime for every time a manager said this about a player, I wouldn't be sitting here with you two hacks. That's for number one, okay? Like, the idea that the second thing is with Eduardo Rodriguez, it doesn't exactly take that much. I mean, you know, it's not like he's come in looking like Giancarlo Stanton the last couple of years, for crying out loud, or really the last few. There's always something with this guy. Do you believe
that's what it comes down to. Even if he's lost a few pounds, right, and he looks a little leaner, which, okay, I'll take Alex Cora's word for it, He's an injury liability with those knees. Like, it just always feels like you just said, there's always something with Eduardo Rodriguez. So maybe he looks a little bit thinner, but feels like it's all a matter of time before something else goes wrong with him.
I was just about to say, Murray, do you trust him?
No. Considering the history, why would you?
This is good Red Sox cynicism. This is the kind of stuff I'm looking for. This is like, give me a break with Eduardo Rodriguez. Marshall, where are you on Eduardo Rodriguez?
I'm not relying on him. How's that? There's no way you can rely on that guy. No way.
So last year, it felt like this guy was starting to turn a corner, remember?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was good for a good chunk of last year. He made 23 starts last year. It looked like it was coming together.
I wanted him to be the opening starter in the playoffs. I wanted him to be your game one starter.
And then do you remember he did cover first base? Was that against the Yankees? Who was that against?
I thought it was against Houston, but, I mean, there was...
Holy crap.
It was against New York.
And was that in a playoff game? I think it was in a playoff game. He didn't cover first base. Like, I don't know how anybody could possibly trust Eduardo Rodriguez. Like, the idea, you know, so this is the guy this year, right? This is the guy who's going to come out of the woodwork. Eduardo Rodriguez, I told you, I just had to get this off my chest from earlier in the week. So let me ask you a question. If there is a quote-unquote breakout guy on this team, or a guy who comes out of the woodwork to exceed expectations and give you something that you didn't expect. And there's usually one on every team. Like, if you remember last year, and it can be a regular, like, one of the guys that everyone was looking at last year that said, boy, he could really take a jump this year, was Bogarts. A lot of people thought Cora might be able to get through to Bogarts.
And he did.
Right. Bogarts and Farrell did not connect. And so with the launch angle thing and encouraging Bogarts to drive the ball more, maybe they can get through and the Red Sox will get something out of Bogarts. And they did. He knocked in 100 runs. He was one of the best shortstops in the game all the way around, yet in the whole game. Now, there's Correa and Houston, Lindor. There were good guys in the league, but Bogaerts was up there last year. Fabulous season for him. Okay? Terrific. Who's the guy this year, Murray?
I think they're going to get more production out of Andrew Benintendi. I thought the defense improved, obviously, in the playoffs. He had one of the biggest catches in the whole postseason. But I really believe that there's enough pop in his bat that he can get the 25, near 30 home runs. And I think you're going to see that kind of production from him this year.
Marshall?
Devers? I mean, I think we saw a lot 2 years ago at the end of the year when he came up and was kind of forced into playing every day. So last year was a combination kind of rookie and sophomore year. I think that particularly because of the longer he had some injuries and the postseason run, he'll be better positioned to be more impactful this season.
Can I pick no one?
Of course. I know you don't like Benintendi all that much. You think he's too cocky, and I think that's one of his better attributes. You think he's kind of an a-hole and a butcher on the base paths.
Yeah, I don't think he's that good.
And you think Devers is a fatso. So.
Yeah, Devers is a little chubby.
Pick Mitch Moreland, why don't you?
First of all, how many guys on that team could you say actually had room to improve? It's not going to be Betts. It's not going to be Martinez. It's not going to be Bogaerts again.
Well, the two we just named.
Okay. but I don't believe in those players.
Blake Swihart? Yeah.
So okay, like I'm going to pick the third catcher? I'm not even sure he's going to be on the roster. I'm not picking anybody. I'm not sure there's a guy coming out of the woodwork on this team. I think it's more likely they'll get... In fact, you know what? Maybe we'll do that later in the show, Murray. Maybe we'll ask which guy is most likely to not beat expectations in 2019. That feels like a fun category for me. We haven't done a ton of Bruins today, but Cam and Taunton wants to touch on Patrice Bergeron. Go ahead, Cam.
How's it going today, guys? This just occurred to me over the weekend. Patrice Bergeron, when he played his 1,000th game, and they had that great ceremony before the game. You know, it's kind of unfortunate he's played in this same city, at the same time as David Ortiz and Tom Brady, two of the greatest winners in post-World War II sports. Because this guy's brilliance really does go unrecognized. I mean, every night out there, you know that he's going to be in the right position. He's going to do the right thing. Professional, one of the most likable superstars you could possibly have. And I think he just slips under the radar so much in this city and across the league. I just wanted to get you guys' thoughts on that.
Murray?
It's maybe because, this is one of the hockey hotbeds. It's still the fourth sport, I feel like, so maybe that's what it is. But he's right. If you look at his numbers, and especially the last couple of weeks that Bergeron's had, he might be having, you could make the case, the most silent great season in this city's history. He's on pace for 85 points. And he missed 16 games.
Yeah, he missed a bunch of games.
With the rib injury.
Yeah, he missed a bunch of games.
Do you know what his career high is in points?
I don't think he's ever had a point a game. I'll say 73.
You nailed it.
Really?
73.
Oh.
And he's on pace for 85, and he's missed 16 games. He's having a phenomenal year. And it has just kind of been overlooked. I mean, granted, the Patriots won the Super Bowl. They have a deep run here. They haven't been front and center unless it's maybe something like that's going on with Pastrnak falling over. Drunk, allegedly, or whatever happened there.
It was icy.
But he really is. Cam nailed it. He's having an awesome year, and it's just kind of been understated.
I mean, I think some of the reason he doesn't get the attention that a lot of other guys do is his personality. He's this really understated guy.
You shouldn't hold that against him.
No, I'm not saying
he's the consummate professional.
No, I'm not saying I hold it against him.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, if people are like, Patrice Bergeron, like, you almost find him forgettable because he's just, you know, he's steady Eddie, you know?
I'm saying that Kyrie Irving being a pain in the ass in some way works in his favor. Because we talk about Kyrie Irving all the time. Patrice Bergeron is never, ever a pain in the ass. That part almost works against him. Dave's in Haverhill. Dave, go.
As what's up? This is my take on how the Sox will initially win the World Series again. Weak schedule, okay? Pitching is, as you will acknowledge, dominant in the beginning of the season. Our bats are better than most, okay? And yes, the bullpen, we're going to slug people out 7-6, 8-5, whatever. And you know what? I believe that, you know, that Dombrowski guy, he knows how
to... All right, you know what? I'm going to let you go. Good God, what a waste of time that call was.
Get better material.
So we said this yesterday. The Yankees are actually favored in Vegas to win the World Series.
Dombrowski.
The Yankees are at 6-1. The Red Sox and Houston are at 7-1. All three of the teams in the American League that we thought were the three best teams in baseball last year, Vegas still regards as the best teams in baseball. If you were to ask me today, right now, which team I would pick to win the World Series, I'd pick the Yankees. I just think that the Yankees are pissed off because they won 100 games last year and got bounced. And the Red Sox cleaned up on them. They fortified their pitching staff a little bit.
More,
and And I think that everything, just about everything, went right for the Red Sox last year, at least with the exception of Chris Sale.
And their manager's a meek moron who doesn't have his finger on the pulse of the team, especially when it comes to anything strategically. Like, I can't. I think that number's ridiculous.
Okay, and listen, Murray, you're right to bring up the manager. I generally think that managers don't mean a lot, but last season with Alex Cora clearly proved otherwise to us. Okay, because Cora was a big reason that team went as far as it did. Just think of the turnaround, right? I mean, they added J.D. Martinez, which was massive. But take out Farrell, put in Cora. The Red Sox tried to sell us the same kind of crap at the end of 2011 that just the manager would turn them back into a championship team. Now, that was Francona out, Bobby Valentine in. And you know, we all know Valentine is a joke. But I generally think that first-year manager that changed, yeah, you might be better, but you're not going to win it. In this case, boy, they couldn't have been more right. Cora tapped into those guys and made a big difference.
Tony, this is the second time Red Sox ownership has done that when they went from Valentine to Farrell. It worked. They won in 13.
Oh, right. And you know what? Grady to Francona won.
Yep. So they're three, done it three times.
Okay. So it's a good point. I never even thought of it. Although Cora was the only one who was a rookie manager, right? The other two guys had managed.
That was a very classy blah, Jimmy.
Yeah, blah. Top of the hour here, no commercials. Marshall will get you caught up on headlines, and then Chris Gasper of the Boston Globe is actually here and in the building. Will join us next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.